Hello, everybody. I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
And I am Jack.
You are Jack.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
And here
Jack.
We are. We're back in the new year with the third season.
Is it?
This is the third season.
No way.
Of Cream Guy Films commentaries. We've come so far,
and I'm still in it.
Yet we've only just begun.
Yes. That's
and there are still some films to cover.
Lots of films.
This week's or this month's or this instalment, I should say.
Yes, it
is. Is something Jack has brought to the table. Tell us what this is, Jack.
This is what you would describe in the broadsheets as a curio.
Uh-huh.
That means it's a bit strange.
Yeah? Right. Or it's pervy.
So this is a film that was shown, or rather, I've only ever seen it once, which was in 1992, I think. It was on Channel 4, and I managed to record it by accident. Because I set the timer for something. And so I think it was the night of Black Wednesday.
In 1992, then.
Was that a Wednesday?
Yeah, that's like that goat in that film about the witches. What's he called? Blank. But it's a Wednesday.
Right, okay, good.
And I think, if memory
serves... Well, Wednesday was September 1992.
Right, okay, so that sounds about right. And I think if memory serves, the schedules were screwed up because there was like an extended Channel 4 news. Is that right?
All the telly schedules that night went mental.
Right, okay.
Would that have been Jon Snow in those days, or would it have been Peter Sissons?
I think it'd be Peter Sissons, wouldn't it?
Jon
Snow was not quite the unspeakable character that he is just now. Yeah. Anyway.
So anyway, without turning this into a protracted ramble about why we're watching this.
Oh no, because there's plenty of time for that.
There's plenty of time for that. So what I will say is that I was in the loft getting my dad's ashes.
Cheers!
That went long very quickly.
Because we're due to scatter them in a few weeks. And I came upon this old VHS, stuck it in the machine and thought, bloody hell, that's Nutty Hijack, which I have not seen for about 10 years. And I don't think you've ever seen, have you, Craig?
I genuinely have no memory. It's the sort of thing I should like and seen, but I've genuinely got no memory of having seen it.
I've got a vague memory I might have seen it, but... I might develop more as it goes on.
Anyway.
I remember that night, you know, trying... Because I was only, in 1992, I think I was 17. So as much as I was into the news and all that sort of thing, I think eventually I must have turned it on, but... I don't know, we'll see, we'll see what rings about.
Right, anyway, shall we crack on?
Sorry, let's crack on.
Let's crack on with the Nutty Hydra.
Good. So it's Channel 4 anyway.
We Channel 4 I don't. So this is basically my rip of my TV, because I don't think there's a commercial version.
Quite nice sort of memories of that time coming back with that.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But obviously it wasn't made in 1992.
No.
So I think it's for what, early 80s? Late 70s?
I'm looking at that copyright date there. That's 1980.
Right.
Anyway, we're in.
All right. A coal mine, fuck me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, who are those two guys? That's the chap from On the Buses, isn't
it? Right, Bob Grant.
Yes.
Who, God, what would they have been doing in 1980? I mean, On the Buses was well finished.
Yeah. Not been in Australia, being in the sort of live shows and shit like that?
Yeah, and then I think he did a lot of those sort of seaside farces. You know, like he would turn up and, oops, there goes my trousers, and, you know... The Grand Theatre Yarmouth or something.
Happy days.
Off season.
And who's his pal? Because I recognise him.
Oh,
is he not like...
Is that Barry Evans?
Yeah, I think it might be actually.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Not looking at his best there, was he? That's a few years after his...
Oh, there he is! Bob Dodd, not in a dress, Mr.
So he plays a kind of feckless boss.
Oh, that is genius casting.
Yes, yeah.
He's got those glasses.
Does he get his teeth out at any point?
Which he used to do. He
used to do that in Benny Hill. Remember asking Benny Hill to start his tomato for him?
Now, did you spot who this is written by? Did you see that?
Yes. The supreme Dick Clunet, Ian Le Clunet.
All right. Is this Wits End film then?
I don't know.
Then it probably would have been, yeah.
Because they would have done... they started off with the Porridge movie. They created Wits End to make the Porridge movie.
Speaking of which, did they just do the joke about, you want me to pee in that from here? How many fucking times did they use that in films?
Well, the best thing about that then is... that it was third hand by the time it got to Never Say Never Again.
Jesus.
So you get the that's a real progression from Ronnie Corbett, from Ronnie Barker to fucking Bob Grant to Sean Connery.
Hang on a minute.
Oh. So here's showers in mines.
Yes,
pit head mines. Pit head showers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they used to have strikes about Jack. But Barry Howard.
And is he genuinely playing a character called Buttercup?
Well, I presume that's his nickname.
We are firmly in 1980, aren't we?
Jesus. I mean, obviously there's no subtitles for this, but we've got the sound on just a peep.
Just in case anyone comes after us.
So this is an interesting thing, I think, because Tony Yasoba is, to me, is an interesting leading man.
He's quite a handsome fellow, isn't he?
I didn't realise he'd even attained that status.
Well, he had a leading part in Charlie
Endo, which was about 78, 79?
Right. Yeah, so he maybe got it off
the strikes, wasn't it? So was that 79?
And he was in Porridge as well, wasn't he?
He was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Quite a good catch of Porridge.
Weirdly, oh, well, there's a wimpy as well. Oh, fucking hell.
What the fuck was it, B-Jams? I remember them.
Oh, do you not remember B-Jams?
Here we go. Season 3, Shops.
It was like Iceland, the shop before there was Iceland, bought brilliantly for freezer shops. Because back then they presumed that if you were going to buy frozen food, you'd probably at some point want to buy a freezer as well.
Oh, really?
So you could buy freezers and the food.
Like those fuck off chest freezers. Or those little square.
My mother-in-law still has a chest freezer.
So if you don't have a kitchen big enough for a big giant fuck-off chest freezer, you get one of the wee square ones.
Oh, thanks.
We had one of them in the Midlands. It lasted about 30 years.
So as I remember, the setup in this is that this guy, Tony Sober, he lives with his missus, but they live with the in-laws.
Oh,
and there's a horrible in-law. But I can't remember. Well, we'll see who it is in a minute.
What's his name? His character's name?
He's called Chrissy in this, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Chrissy, I used to
Brazil.
Know. I used to know his sister.
Oh, Chrissy Brazil.
Tony Yasoba's sister.
Really?
Yeah, who was actually called Christine, I think, weirdly.
Mm.
She lived in Millport.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah, it's just one of those things.
I'm moving on to the chocolates now.
You've moved to dessert, of course, already.
She told me, I'm another pork pie, but she actually told me that when he started in Porridge, Tony Yasoba, he was meant to be playing, like they wanted him to do an English accent or whatever. Uh-huh. And he said no, because he was doing a posh voice because he was going for acting jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, well, can I not do a Glaswegian accent?
Mm.
And they said, that's quite hard to maintain. He went, no, I'm actually from Glasgow.
Oh, really?
So the whole, he wasn't written originally as Black Jock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was just meant, because it was like, the point was he was meant to be Scottish and all that. That was written in after they found out it was Scottish.
Now look at the lineup of his cronies.
Oh, man.
What's his name that played Ringo in?
Derek Deadman.
Yep. Yep.
The great Derek Deadman.
Uh-huh. Jimmy Ellis.
That's Jimmy Ellis. Oh, I mean, how many boxes are they going to tick in this?
I think he's playing a dodgy Irishman, isn't he?
Neil McCarthy.
Now, here's the thing, right?
A scary face.
Carl Hammond, who you can see there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his character in this is called Jacko.
Oh.
Is that a coincidence? Just given this is Clement and Lafrenet, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Brushstrokes is not Clement and
Lafrenet. No, it's not. No. Bob, isn't
it? Johnny's Bob.
And what's more, he's a bit of a womanizer in this.
Yeah. But a lovable one.
Yeah, but that was Carl.
Yeah.
That's what his character was. Should he turned up in
Murder
on the Orient, Minder on the Orient Express?
Maybe that's in his contract. He had two clauses. Must be lovable and called Jacko.
Oh, there's Sam Kelly.
Negotiate on latter, but not former.
There's a lot of Porridge alumni in this.
Mm-hmm. So what's this about?
Sam Kelly who just passed the
right,
not that long ago.
So just to lay in the plot what's happening here. This is a bunch of ex-cons.
Uh-huh.
Down their luck. The Tony Sober's tried to go straight,
mm-hmm.
And no one's taken him seriously. And then this chap here, he has turned up with the newspaper, which is basically saying that in the coal mines, they've discovered gold.
Wow. So now there's gold in Humber Hills.
So now, I think what happens now is they start to hatch a plot that basically they're going to go in and try and steal the gold.
I'm seeing a black guy going down a coal mine. This isn't going to end well.
This isn't
going
to.
Although, actually, having seen the stuff at the coal mine at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
brings me to being a bit of a film, being the resident film nerd here.
Mm-hmm.
It looked pretty nice, and there's a very good reason for that.
Mm.
What is the reason for
this
that?
This is, I think, the first film, I don't know if it's the only film, directed by the great Gilbert Taylor.
Mm. No.
Yes, indeed. Cinematographer.
Is it called Shiny Enough?
The Scourge of George Lucas. And actually, there's a few things we'll have to talk about with that, because this is complicated here. Because Gilbert Taylor, of course, deserves things like Ice Cold and Alex and lots of films going way back. He shot Star Wars.
Yeah.
Didn't get on well with Lucas. He tried to have him taken off it, and he was told to get to fuck by Alan Ladd because Gilbert Taylor knew what he was doing. And 3 years later, the sequel was directed by the great, what's his name again?
Irvin Kershner.
And the cinematographer in that was Peter Jasinski, son of Wolfgang. And Peter Jasinski is the cinematographer on Nutty Hijack.
Wow.
So it all I don't know how you fucking find the time to do it.
So wait a minute. This is a film that's a West End production, presumably, with Clement Lafreniere. We'll find that out at the end. So it's written by Clement Lafreniere.
Yeah.
It's directed by Gil Taylor.
Yeah.
It's shot by Peter Jasinski. What the fuck?
It's a ticket. I didn't actually see who the producers were. Was there a producer's credit came up? I don't know. We need to see that at the end, because all that suggests someone with more money than sense, really. Yeah. Because these guys wouldn't have come cheap.
So now we've met all the Earth characters.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, what we're going to see in a minute is the other side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And may I say,
there's a real man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord Peter of Bowles.
Playing Leland Fuchs.
Yeah.
Oh.
Richard, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I thought that was Graham Garden.
No. Who's that dude?
Richard Widmark.
What's he been in?
Well, going back, he was in some good shows. I was a rotten actor, though.
He's in The Swarm.
This was the arse end of his career when it was all not great. He was in The Swarm. He was
Biz! Richard Biz!
What did we see him in recently? He was shouting at somebody at.
Was it not me shouting about?
It might have been shouting about bees.
And we watched not as a commentary, but over Christmas we watched the Murder on the Orient Express, the Albert Finney one. Of course,
yeah,
he's in that.
That's right. He's also in that film I like.
He's bad in that.
True Colours. He's rotten in that as well. I remember the old senator that.
Yeah.
That one with James Spader.
So why the fuck would he be in a UK film about this?
Well, the thing is, at the time, there would have been, like you say, fag end career.
Aye.
And you get the feeling he was a wee bit.
I think he was a bit of a drink.
No, hang on a second. Sorry,
there's probably.
I know that we've only got the volumetrical.
Well, money out of country.
I know we've only got the volumetrical little peep here, but listen to this phone call, because I'm pretty sure that's Janet Brown being the PM.
Really?
Oh, female PM, very satirical. Now, didn't Clement Lafreniere also do Water?
Oh Christ, I did.
And that has Janet Brown playing.
So it does.
Is it Janet Brown in that?
If it's not Janet Brown, it'll be Faith Brown.
Yeah, it's probably the other. I think it's Janet Brown.
We'll get Josh to find out.
Water was a wee bit later than this, though. What was that, about 85? Or something like shit.
It's terrible.
It's a shit film. Beautiful, though.
Yeah, but that's lovely. Just Dennis O'Brien spunking up as much money as he possibly can.
Well, of course, the thing is that at exactly the same time they were making A Private Function, which was constantly being starved of budget and of money. Of course, that was the big hit.
Yeah.
Big hit in America as well. And Water's just... Oh, it's
just. Is that one Billy Connolly in it?
Yeah.
Connolly's in that, yeah. Actually, Connolly's not that bad, is he?
Has that bit when he sings song, See My People Come to Me, All They Want Is Liberty.
Show me no mercy, give me no bail, I'm ready, I'm willing to go to jail.
But, it was before he became unspeakable.
Well, that's the thing, is like. You said this was 1980?
I think so, yeah.
So by that time, he'd been in Elephant's Graveyard, the BBC Scotland, the Peter McDougall play.
Yeah.
And he'd been in. Remember, he used to crop up with things like Andrew Cleese in The Line?
Yeah.
It's a fucking coaster there.
Was there?
Yeah. Jesus. Just a fucking table, you dick.
Remember,
see, old Jack.
You know, like Andrew Cleese and that. And he used to crop up. Remember that big massive series about Scotland's history? It was like, it was filmed all in location and all
was
that.
It was called
a big
Scotland's
deal.
History?
Yeah, it was
Scotland's
like,
Scottish
but
history.
It was like right from like... St. Columba and all that sort of thing. Anyway, the point is...
Hello, I'm St. Columba!
But he wasn't...
It's magic!
But the point is, he wasn't like that then.
No, it's true. It's before
because he hadn't sort of developed that RC attitude yet. So actually, he was quite fun in films, because he was just himself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he wasn't.
Then he went to the Royal Wedding, and that was it.
Oh, yeah.
Stopped drinking, went to the Royal Wedding.
Yeah.
So my friend Jonathan points out, it was much more fun when he drank.
Anyway, so the deal here is... Peter Bowles is basically under pressure because the mining isn't efficient enough, or something like
that. Well, it's 1980.
Yeah.
Which feels to me quite on the nose for that period of time.
Well, so is Lance Jeeves basically playing Ian McGregor? I'm coming in here, sort out your minds, you goddamn limey bastards.
So I suppose, actually, it's quite interesting, although none of this would have... It's weirdly prescient in a way, because it never have worked... You don't know for a wee while, I'm saying in 1980, but Peter Boggs' character, what's he called?
Leyland.
Would have been the sort of a... Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is that Henry McGee?
That is Henry McGee. What a man.
So this is like
the fabulous.
This is the in-laws.
Yeah.
And you were saying, sorry, go on, Chris, finish your point.
So Peter Bowles' character would have been eventually characterised as a wet.
Ah, okay.
Because he's kind of old school.
And you really should. Where did terminology come in then? And was it Thatcher who termed it?
Or not? Oh, yeah, yeah.
The wets, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I remember it was around the government.
It was during her first government. She got rid of them by the second one.
Mm. And wets were all like Jim Pryor. Yeah. And all the old...
Patrick.
Yeah.
And you? Cargill?
Was he one?
St. John.
Magoon?
Fosley.
Yeah, Nigel St. John Stevens.
Yeah, Nigel
Norman St. John Stevens.
Bag of Maltesers. You've got to have a system. And Lord St. John Fosley.
Remember there was a song about it in Spitting Image? No matter how bloody awful things get, we're weds, weds, weds.
So, were weds, were they...
They were not one of us.
Fans of Heath.
You've ever seen his
Heathites? Yeah, they were Heathites. Right, okay. They weren't into the whole monetarism thing and all that sort of thing. No. I wonder, right, so there's the great Patricia Hayes. And this is 1980.
She's playing Keith Joseph,
right? Yeah. And I wonder if I love the idea that because Gil Taylor made this, that maybe George Lucas watched this and thought, I'm going to put that old woman into Willow.
She's in Willow.
Which is one of the most extraordinary casting strokes ever.
Yeah.
When you have a big final battle at the end of a big major Hollywood film between Jean Marsh and Patricia Hayes.
Yeah, it's quite cool as well.
Fucking nuts.
Now look who's playing Chris's wife. He's done very well for himself, Craig.
Oh, it's Adeline Smith. Even Amwa.
She's quite something. Especially if you were a fan of the old horror films like I am, you know. She's right up with Caroline Munro. Stephanie Beecham.
Henry McGee would have been in his Honey Monster pulp
at this point.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because until the Sugar Puffs adverts, I can't think of him being in any
of them. It was Benny Hill.
Yeah. Except for the Benny Hill show.
Yeah.
And what did he do after this?
Jesus, is that Carmen Sylvester?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
So who's she playing?
She's the horrible mother-in-law.
I genuinely didn't know Carmen Silvera had been in really anything before. No, apart
from Hello.
She was an opera singer.
Is that right?
Yeah. There you go. Because that was the in-joke.
Oh,
where she couldn't sing.
Yeah.
Madam Edith. But I'm trying to... I was just almost thinking there as well. Where do we play... If we're thinking about where Henry McGee is, where do we place Peter Bowles at this point?
This must be...
This was around the time of... To the Man of Bourne, by then.
Right.
Before he did Lytton's Diary, which was written by my mate's dad.
Oh, really?
My mate Dominic. His dad's Ray Connolly.
Really?
Wrote about the Beatles and all that, and wrote That'll Be the Day and all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
In fact, when we were at university together, which I was, this was last showing, clearly.
Yeah.
Dominic, he's a journalist now. Dominic, he uses a nom de plume. We used to stop having all the bylines in the student paper. He would use Jimmy McLean because he played little Jimmy McLean. Jimmy McLean's son in Stardust, I think he turns up at the beginning of it.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Yeah.
Ray Connolly was one of those people that used to, you know, like when you were a kid in the late 70s and 80s, and you would be told that these were big music industry names, but they were a wee bit too early for you to understand why. Yeah. You were just told, like Mickey Most.
Absolutely.
Like you were always told Mickey Most was music industry guru, but from your own contemporary knowledge of music, there was nothing to bear that out.
No, absolutely.
I take it Mickey
Mouse.
It's
quite hot in here tonight, Chris.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
It's quite smouldering.
Yeah. It's cold outside,
isn't it?
Mickey Mouse never got into trouble, did he? Is he?
No.
So what's going on here?
He's a great guy.
So this is basically, he's got a fucking hangover. His mother-in-law's horrible to him. And then the gram, who's his mother-in-law.
Is she the heart of gold?
Yeah, she's basically...
She on his side?
She hates daughter. And she says to him, why don't you look through the paper? Something might come up.
Ah.
Which is directing him back to that headline again.
Nice. But we're quite far into it for that to actually start kicking in, finally.
Yeah, I think that's maybe one of the problems.
Oh, look, a news...
It does take a wee
while. Is that Fulton MacKay?
It's a newsroom.
Yeah.
Fucking fantastic. Oh, playing a newsroom. Paper editor, which he does a year later, or 5 years later, in Defence of the Realm.
He's kind of the proprietor. Yeah, of he's a proprietor, shadowy
right.
proprietor.
Yeah, this is the world of TV. This
fucking TV hell. Newsroom,
so we wouldn't know much about that.
No, we weren't in hospital.
Yeah.
And so look who that dude is,
Simon Cadell.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crossover in this now. Simon Cadell did a turn as a news reporter.
Did he?
Yeah, in Meteor.
That's right. Yeah.
It's the least convincing there.
I found it recently, his sister's an actress, and I can't remember what she's in now.
The Ground?
No, he is, she's not.
That's funny.
She's quite... Are we doing a reverse Q&A?
Aye, sure.
Yeah.
FAQ.
That's the one, sorry.
Oh, look, there's a comment about the two-day week, do you hear that?
Oh, yeah, aye.
It's sort of, do you think it's a wee bit like... Is it like too early in 1980 to be like overtly satirical and political, having just come out of the winter of discontent?
I don't know. I suppose at that stage, I mean, I've never really been convinced it was terrible. I suppose what's his name was quite satirical. Not the 9 o'clock news and whatnot. So that would be kicking about around then,
right? So I just wonder if for this, it's like,
you know what, the newsroom's the fucking dead spit of the one in. Is it Global News or whatever it's called? And Drop the Dead Donkey.
Oh yeah,
they've obviously just like said, "I just do that." That was a good program in its day.
Drop the Dead Donkey. Yeah, well, that was total must watch. Wasn't
oh,
it?
Absolutely,
Friday night,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
But I always felt the satirical jokes weren't as good actually as the sort of personal stuff, the office stuff.
Well, but do you not think the satirical stuff, because it was all because it was all recorded to be topical that day.
Uh-huh.
It was just them all sitting round.
Yeah, and just saying stuff, yeah.
And they sometimes could come across a bit wanky.
Yeah, I thought that, yeah. But it's all stuff about what? Guy and what was his name and all that.
Now, hang on a second, there's an interesting camera.
Oh!
Look at the guy who's eating the bacon sandwich, who's driving the truck.
That's the big one!
He's having a wee jolly.
Did you know that was coming up when we were just talking about him there?
Well, I remember he's in the film.
You sneaky bastard, Jack. But as we say, Connolly was all right then.
Aye, I swear that's the fucking yard. Remember that advert for how to back up the lorry properly? What's his
name? Oh, that's
Graham Swift. Is it Graham Swift? Is it? It's just like that. Looks like just like the yard there.
So now we get a bit of not massively realistic.
And there you go, there's your Charles Endell Esquire, right there.
Now, so he is called Sir Crispin St. John Byrne.
So is Roy Kinnear his secretary or the PM secretary?
He's the PM's private secretary. But he's in this, he's a bit like a proto Norman Tebbit.
Well, I was going to say, that's quite interesting, because normally, up until now, surely, like a Prime Minister's private secretary would be like suave and posh and all that.
He's
so it's like quite interesting they've gone for the...
Little bulldog.
Somebody a bit more working class.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. It's quite foreshadowing quite a lot of this.
Yeah, it is,
You wonder why then it's sort of disappeared.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I mean, I went to try and get it on the Amazon and it wasn't there. No reference at all.
What about sort of old... No sort of back copies for sale?
No, there's nothing. So, I mean, I couldn't even find any trace that it had ever been commercially released.
I wonder if it's one of those films that gets lost in amongst...
a takeover, you know, like, or something.
Well,
or,
no, I was thinking... Bust. You know, like, companies like moving for like...
British
I remember
Lion.
in the film, in the book about handmade films that I've got somewhere, there was the stuff about Nuns on the Run.
Mm-hmm.
And how it kept on getting shifted from like Palace Pictures, and then it get picked up from a wee bit from another company, and then they just end up getting lost.
Yeah,
and then they just never get shown again because nobody knows who to assign the rights to. Or...
Well, the other thing that's weird about this is that I don't ever remember it being on TV again, and the only time I remember it being on TV was when it wasn't scheduled to be on TV.
Well,
somebody out there will have it.
One of the great Talismans of Prime Guy Films, of course, was Alf Spot and a Float.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's what?
Alf Spot and a Float. It's a crazy gang film. And they get shown.
I don't even know what you're saying there.
Alf's Button, a Float. In the late 80s, it was shown in the summer in the afternoon. And it never got shown, or it's never been shown until ever since.
Now, there's a classic man working under a car, bangs his head, and someone else comes in.
Dong.
So this was the point where basically Chris has now changed his mind and he's saying, yeah, let's go and do the heist.
So how's he supposed to know all these guys? They're just all like old mates and things.
I think the idea is that like they've done time together. So and then they've all got their own skills and shit, you know.
You'd fucking struggle to find a film now that would have a main character who's a sort of light-hearted character who's done time.
Mm. Well, I suppose it makes sense that it's Clement Lafreniere then.
Mm. Yeah.
But, remember, when this was a proper country, mm-hmm. you could have films like that, okay. like, you know, you could have a sympathetic, like Mona
yeah.
Lisa.
Yeah.
Mm, that's true.
Where somebody's just out of prison. But you, in the way that you can do in America, because if an American audience sees somebody come out of prison, they just wonder why they're not being fucking jagged up or electrocuted or something.
Now, Sam Kelly was in Holding On. Do you remember that TV mm-hmm. series?
Which one was that?
It's by Tony Martin. It was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
It was David Morrissey. David Calder was in it. It's, I think it was the best thing that Tony Martin did. And Sam Kelly played taxi driver. It was one of those things where it had...
Peter Vaughan as well.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's, I think he's like the guy in the NUM or something.
He's only 32.
What?
He's only about 32 yeah. then. He looked old his entire life.
Yes.
Yeah. What was Holding On about?
Right, so Holding On was a drama set in London that had all sorts of different storylines. But the main storyline was that David Morrissey had a brother who he disowned.
You mean David Morrissey?
David Morrissey.
Yes, he had a brother who he disowned, and the brother had become a schizophrenic and homeless, and he ends up killing someone. And then David Morrissey ends up, I think, meeting or something. Mm. But it's got David Calder in it, and he's brilliant.
And Sam, this was a comedy?
No,
it was, it was a drama.
Yeah. Sam Kelly plays a taxi driver who he's put upon by his wife, and then he snaps and kills one of his fares, and then suddenly his wife decides that she loves him again. It was good. He was very good in it.
It got kind of lost at the time around Fridging Enough.
Like the sound of it.
It was good.
Well, really, really good.
Mm-hmm. And look who the lady is in the canteen.
Who's that?
That's what's her name? Come on.
Oh, it's Dame Marianne Stone.
There you are.
Another Cream Guy film's totem. Yeah. The sheer number of films that she was in just for fleeting moments. They must have. She must have made a fortune over the years, but all in tiny checks.
So I take it. Peter Vaughan here is playing the sort of union leader. He's their sort of Mick McGarkey.
Mm. Mm.
He would have been head of the NUM in 1980, wasn't he?
Would he?
No. No, it would have been... Mick McGarkey never got to be president.
That's right, he never became president.
They changed the rules so that he would be too old.
So what was happening in the mining industry at this time then? So we're 4 years before the big strike?
Well, interestingly...
My dad had left by then.
Yeah. There you go. You can still see... like adverts from the time in the late 70s when they're advertising for miners mm-hmm. coming up down the pit, fuck knows why you want it. But it was in that sort of lull period between 74 and 83 where mm-hmm. it wasn't particularly controversial or anything.
We had industry, so
yeah. Well, the only controversial thing about it was that they always needed more miners, mm-hmm. and then suddenly they didn't.
I'm from a long line of miners.
Are you?
Yeah. Oh, my dad's
a whole seam.
A whole seam. My dad left after about 18 months because his dad had died when my dad was 12.
Wow.
And my granddad died when he was 41 of coal dust poison.
Black. Wow.
Yeah. This is in South Wales. My dad's Welsh. No, it's not very. Don't hate me for that.
Not very romantic about
it. No, I'm always have that slight ambivalence about it. My dad said it was just fucking horrible. He left and joined the Navy right before Suez in order to get out of it.
It's one of those sort of mythologising things like shipbuilding, but actually it was a fucking horrible job.
Great sense of humour there.
Eh?
Shipbuilders, great sense of humour.
It was all about the humour, I loved it. It was like a vertical city. Oh, and everyone was playing the banjo and fucking great.
You know, I mean, a few folk got stabbed for liking the Celtic, but it didn't matter. I'm talking
here.
Industrial accidents. Ho, ho, ho.
And actually, you don't. You really don't get the working class in films like this anymore, do you? In this way.
There's no working class anymore.
Sorry?
There's no working class anymore.
No, no. Well, that's the thing, though, isn't there? There are almost fucking everybody.
Yeah.
Except the only films that they get into now are unspeakable Ken Loach bollocks.
Hmm. Yeah. Where they slightly sort of.
Actually, it's quite interesting to look at this and think, what would it have been like if it was a Ken Loach film?
Oh, yeah, well.
I'm sort of not nearly as good.
Somebody would have had silicosis by now, anyway.
I suppose we're missing a lot of the joke. We're not laughing very much. Mm. It's quite talky, though, isn't it?
It is a bit talky, but then it's a massive cast.
So but now, then that's what films were like then.
Yeah.
British films especially, because they'll all have been on. They'll all have been hanging around.
Yeah.
Shepperton and Elstree and whatever. Give them a couple of hundred quid, come in for a day, come and do that. Right, dolly.
Would you look at the fucking light pinging off those glasses there, that shit. That shit. Because Peter Jasinski, who made this, like I say, I don't know how the fuck he managed it, because he was working on Empire Strikes Back. And that was a famously difficult shoot.
Mm. But then they were knocked off this in a few weeks, principal photography show.
I was looking at Peter Jasinski recently because, as you know, I bought for you for your Christmas that book up there, the Will Jasinski one. And he died last year at 105 or something.
Yeah, sorry, proper cinematography.
And Peter's 75. His son.
Wow. That'll do.
Now,
so they're planning what they're going to do now.
I'm trying to think of where all the other actors might have been at the time. So Neil McCarthy, one of the gang, he's in a couple of years later, he's in Clash of the Titans.
A year later?
He's in Clash of the Titans?
Calibos.
Yeah, he plays Calibos.
I did used to think that was called Clash of the Titans when I was young.
Well, just like that one. Same kind of thing.
Misogynist.
So they used to have the...
Although at the start of that film, there are a lot of titans.
I really liked that film.
But they used to have this little half-page comic strip adverts in comics that he's writing. It'd be like Invicta.
I've never seen the remake.
Clash of the Titans.
With the one with the worst ever.
Titans re-clash.
Titans will clash. Let's just flip it on you. We'll flip you. Titans
will.
It's sort of a.
Oh.
Now his.
Stand by.
His
montage.
His always watched one in the film. His last montage. With a tune which I'm pretty sure is by Lindsay DePaul.
Wow.
Lindsay Rock Bottom DePaul.
Yeah. It's Maggie for me. She sung that as well, didn't she?
I don't know. See, Lindsay DePaul was something that always passed me by. It was just like, first of all, when I was a kid, I used to mix her up with Linda Lusardi.
Did you?
Just the name. I just thought it was like, Lindsay DePaul, Linda Lusardi. Yeah. I don't know. And the other one
Titans
was...
Clash.
Yeah. And I just, it was one of those things where, again, it was like Mickey Most or something. Oh, she's dead famous for the music business. Really?
Vince Hill, who sung with her It's Maggie for Me. He's another one I can never work out why he was famous.
He's fucking dreadful, right?
Yeah.
Talking about name mix up to Rose, who we might remember from previous podcasts.
The Lady Rose.
No idea.
Do you remember who she used to get Roger De Courcy mixed up with? Do you remember?
Is that a STV call?
She used to genuinely get Roger De Courcy mixed up with Darcy DeFarcy. Running that series.
Have I ever told you about my great Ferranti thing?
Ferranti.
The As in factory. Back to the Ferranti, the factory. Yeah. I grew up in North Edinburgh, there's a lot of Ferranti factories, so that's about, there's three of them. I lived between two of them, not just me, but, you know, a stretch of road between two of them.
Not like the wee building and
I was the wee one liking
up. Batteries not included.
Exactly, aye. If anyone knows North Edinburgh, on Ferry Road, between Crutal and Is the one near? At...
Don't give away the terrace.
I know, absolutely.
Is that near the Wimpy?
No. And the one at Silver House. And when I was growing up, I thought that Ferranti's was a place that your auntie worked at. I honestly did. Because what would you say for Ferranti's? Well, that's amazing. Like a place where only your auntie can work.
Did somebody else working
Hang
for
on,
uncles.
Did you genuinely think that?
Oh, I swear on my son's life I thought that.
Well, when I was a kid, because there used to be stories about Ferranti's all the time. Because it was always on the verge of closing. Because basically...
Auntie's?
Because basically, Basil Ferranti was always just trying to shoehorn more money in the government, so he was always about to close the factory. But I never understood what it was, and I, for some reason, always thought it was a factory that made sweets.
What does Ferranti make?
Ferranti was
an arms manufacturer.
Well, kind of weapons guidance systems and whatnot for the British planes since the war.
Then they became, they were taken over by, first of all, they became GEC Marconi, and now it's actually Thales that own them, the French. So it's the same sort of stuff. Yeah. But I mean, loads of fun. They put me, go for a curry, go for a curry, good pal of ours. All the engineering training, they had a brilliant engineering training. You'd get an HNC, HND, plus you with, I know,
imagine like that!
A dozen people.
Thank I know,
and actually, at 17 years old, exactly, you would go in and you'd actually get skills.
Fuck's sake.
Fucking crazy horse.
So, talking
just as well they put an end to all that shit.
You want Jaguar car? You want Jaguar airplane? You'll give me lots more money. That was Basil de Ferranti.
Well, that was good. Talking about things you don't understand, like Ferranti.
He'd a helicopter, famously.
Can either of you two explain to me Captain Beaky?
No.
No.
Do you remember Captain
Beaky? I don't.
The bravest animals in the land are Captain Beaky and his bandits, Timmy Toad and Sonny Rett and Artful and Ratty.
So he used to be in a swap shop every now and then. So what was it?
Is it like a musical or something? No, I think it was basically an album that was brought out. There was a sort of kids...
Oh, was it?
...kind of spoken, sung album. Oh, Keith Michelle, who was famous for playing... He was actually Australian.
Keith Michelle,
he was famous for playing him in Eighth. He sang it and did it.
And not as I always thought as a kid, because I thought he was the same person as Guy Mitchell.
Remember that great bit? And actually, we should do a comic sniff for Patriot Games, one of my favourite films, favourite shit films ever. And the bit that we remember, Patrick Bergen is sitting there going, "Hey, I'm Irish," and he's waiting. In the week that Martin McGuinness died, he's in his farmhouse waiting for the really seriously violent IRA people that were mentioned in the film to come and kill him. And he's sitting having a cup of tea and watching a Clan Ad video from Harry's Game.
What songs did they have?
That just,
apart from that one.
Well, every songs are in.
What are they saying in that song? Is it Hold the Door?
The hoodie bar. And then one of them broke away from them and did,
is that Enya?
Will you go, will you go, with the or run up?
Is it really?
Yeah,
she's from the Clan Ad clan.
Splitter. She's the Shirley Williams.
That makes so much sense.
She was quite hot though, I did quite fancy her when I was...
Now there's a good bit here because Billy Connolly gets battered. So here is a bit of action in the film. So this is where they actually do the hijack. So they now are going to...
Time for the Nutty High.
Yeah, this is the Nutty... Why is it called... Do you know why it's called Nutty Hijack?
Is it to do with Nutty Slack?
What's that?
Nutty Slack kind of cool? Is typical. Yeah.
Is that a mainstream reference to a thing?
Oh, yeah, no.
To
the
audience?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I always assumed it was because his name's Brazil. Chris Brazil.
What's that?
Brazil Nuts.
No.
Is it a play on another film?
What, like Nutty Hijack?
Yeah.
No. When was that out?
It's 79.
Well, I think it would be
too late.
No, I think it'd be a combination of the fact that hijacks were quite big then.
They certainly were, weren't they?
Lots of hijacking going on.
No, these people just go straight for the killing. Back then, people actually fucking hijacked stuff.
Well,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And here's the other thing
about it.
Getting pulled over by the police.
Oh, who's the copper?
Back indicator lights to me.
And the but the no, the nutty slack thing's a big reference.
What?
It's even in the record of Larry Grayson's Slack Alice.
Yes,
because he's Slack Alice as our partner. She's going to marry Coleman when things are looking slack. He still gets his nutty slack. Good old Alice. Slack Alice.
Filthy.
Yeah. Well, that's
bloody good. Slack Grayson.
I quite like. Have you had your nutty slack recently?
Yeah. It was posh call.
No.
Why is it called nutty slack though?
Don't know.
Do you want me to Google it?
Also, this is not really... Well, that bit's a hijack, I suppose. Or isn't hijack just planes? But it's more like a hostage. It should be called like nutty hostage.
This is going remarkably smoothly though, isn't it? They're getting in quite easily.
It's a film title. It's not a crossword clue. Yeah. It's all right. It's not like you can work out the end of the film if you work out the anagram of the title.
Speaking of crossword clues, we should mark the death this week of Colin Dexter.
Oh, yes, indeed. Great lovely Colin.
Would you like to mark it anagrammatically?
I'll try.
She idea. What? He's dead.
Right, okay, that's good.
Very good.
Do you know an anagram of Jeremy Irons? I can do an anagram of Jeremy Irons.
Go on.
Jeremy's iron. That's a Simpsons joke.
You know what the greatest anagram in a crossword ever was?
Go on.
On?
The question, it was done That's by Arcaria of The Guardian.
And
That was a live anagram.
That was good. The clue was, poetic scene, ?
Right, we'll get there.
Chased Lord Archer vegetating. And it was 11... Sorry, it was 3, 4, 8, 11.
What? 3, 3, 8, 11. 3, 3, 8, 11. Oh, fuck's sake.
3, 3, 8, 11.
I thought I had it there.
Shall I tell you what it was?
Okay, please.
The answer is the old vicarage, Grantchester. First of all, it was Robert Browning's... Rupert Brooke's house.
All right.
And at the time that the clue came out, as it is now, it was owned by Lord Archer.
Wow.
That's nice, isn't it?
I've got a crossword out there.
Go on then.
So my feckless flatmate from about 20 years ago, Richard, I came home from work and he was sitting there and he was doing a crossword. And I'm thinking, well, that's not like him because he just sat there and smoked dope. I said, what are you doing? He said, I love crosswords. I didn't realise this is what they were about.
What?
Right, and he said he loved crosswords, right?
He didn't realise that that's what they were about.
Right, yeah. Well, so I'm thinking, what the fuck's he done, right? So he'd filled out one clue, okay? And it was like the quick crossword.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the clue was recline, seven letters. And do you know what he'd written in?
Recline. So did he think he crosswords was easy and just filled it in?
There was a copying
game. You know that, what's his name? Don Gulwood used to just write gibberish in them.
Oh, right.
And so he would just fill them in. People say he's amazing at crosswords. And someone lifted it up one day and said to him, this is genuine. Lifted it up and said, what does diddy bums mean? He said, I don't know what it fits.
My mother had an argument with a bow.
A crossword, and she lost.
Never
a crossword, eh?
No, because in a game of Scrabble, he tried to use the word squintings.
Who?
He did.
That was Old Man Bick. He put down squintings.
Old Man Bick?
Yeah, my mother went out with a chap called Old Man Bick. Old Man Bick.
What did that cost them? A shally
Old Man
Zermatt.
Bick. Old Man Bick, right, loved.
It cost Bombay and Morocco.
Now listen, Old Man Bick.
Was he actually Laszlo Bick, the Argentinian inventor?
Who had been doing quite well until then.
So anyway, Old Man Bick loved cakes and desserts, right? And one time...
Sorry, wait a minute. Liked what?
Cakes and desserts.
No, why not? Right? Why would
he? No, sorry, I didn't give a first problem.
And my mother thought he was a bit greedy about that. Anyway, so we were all in Hay and Why one day.
I love all that.
And he disappeared, right?
So he's all good.
Listen, he disappeared and he came back 15 minutes later. Looking a little bit sheepish, and he had ice cream smeared on his hat. Anyway, when my mum actually dumped him in the end, right, she then found, like, months later in her address book, a little note which said, Mr. Bick no longer required.
So, hang on a minute. How many minutes into the film are we? We started off with your dad's ashes, and now we've got your mum's love life.
Isn't it?
What next?
It's one of those circle of life things.
It certainly is.
So now they're
in... Did we say the reason we're putting this out today was because this is the day, hence, that you'll be scattering your dad's ashes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Over whatever portion of the country your mum doesn't own yet.
Exactly.
Over
Mr. Bitscreen. She hasn't land grabbed.
Yeah. Yes, that's the plan. So, because that's why, of course, I found the VHS.
That's where you found
place.
The VHS in the first place.
Just kicked off this exciting else? New season of...
Oh, hang on.
This exciting new season. Oh,
I think the plan's going badly.
Oh, things are going awry.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Ah, okay. So, basically, what's happened
is
this,
point
right?
A gun at Marianne Stone.
He's not quite so charming now, is he?
She just look
Carol
at him
Holman. He's not quite so charming now at all.
So the deal with this is that they've now broken into this mine, because I think there's also gold there. And now it starts to become apparent that actually, if there is gold, no one's actually dug it up yet.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, the fatal flaw.
So, what are they going to do?
Here's Bob Todd again.
Bob Todd, why, guy?
What are they going to do? And why is the NUM guy hanging around? Would that just be the case?
What for wealth?
Do they just hang around the mines?
For comedic effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Clearly. Fine. So,
what was I going to say there?
Is that a spelling mistake in the background there?
Maybe.
Yeah, they are.
Did you find any other treasures?
In the loft? God, now what do we have in the loft?
Was it like that bit in The Silence of the Lambs that she goes and finds the fucking body of Benjamin Raspail in the car?
She just finds a jar with
Mr. Big's fucking head.
With Peggy Hook in
it. We'll be no more. We'll hear no more.
My dad's Dalgetty Bay sailing club tankards.
Nice, man.
Oh, they sound good.
Dalgetty Bay's not a place to go sailing in, though. It's full of radiation.
Yeah.
Big cups.
Were they glowing when you went up into the attic? You didn't have to put a light on.
Phosphorescent. That's not phosphorescent.
But all my off-air VHSs are in the loft. So
I've got tons of them in that cupboard there as well. I keep meaning
to go up to your loft.
Oh, you'd be very
I'm worried that I'd break the ladder.
Nah, you'd be fine. Mate.
I keep meaning to get all those tapes. You
just
know,
think what else we might find.
Yeah, I've got tons of stuff in them.
This could be a whole new sub-series, things we've found.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
I bought a VHS cassette at, I think it was maybe the Block End Market. And it was an off-air recording of stuff. But basically what it was, it was a guy who obviously liked trains and Channel 4 softcore pornography. Because all it was is edited highlights of bits from films where there's trains. And then cut to, I think it's like Naked Yoga or something, or whatever it was that Channel 4 used to do. And it was just like, and I tell you what, he'd been pretty diligent.
I tell you what,
he'd be very intelligent.
If he'd actually just phoned up Jeremy fucking Irons, he'd say, absolutely, dear Bart, just come down, we'll get you to program a whole series.
Let me give you an audio impression of it, because it would go like,
I've got this wonderful program called Mini Pops that you might like.
No, wasn't it? So go from yoga, so you'll be going,
that'd be quite worrying, because how do you time that?
I reckon he must have had been doing the old two tape things.
Okay.
Did you do that, given that you're an early adopter?
Not really,
did you not have two VHS recorders at any point?
Well, we had the only one for Edinburgh, of course, for 10 years.
There was a period where
you're never going to let that lie, are you?
No. In the Millard, we found ourselves with two videos once, I can't remember why, and we set about taping things. But they were copies of things taped off the telly, so they were dreadful, dreadful, copies of things.
Yeah.
Some of which I still have.
Because you're taping them from, is it like the aerial to aerial port, isn't it?
I remember once my late friend John, God bless him.
Oh, hang on. Sorry to interrupt, but can I just point out the decanter alert?
Oh, lovely, yeah. I have decanters. I like a bit of business with a decanter.
Well, you see, I always associate decanters with T.P. O'Neill.
All right, yeah.
Because he was just always quite sinister in episodes of Thriller.
Yeah.
So if there was a sinister character appeared in an episode of Thriller, the decanter was required.
The decanter was always...
Tales of Unexpected was always a great decanter program as well.
See, when they pour from the decanter, it's always closer to the camera, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, if you walk right up to the camera, and then get it, and then stand with the back to the... face the camera with the shifty eyes.
So this is...
Can I just tell you my story about the tape-to-tape?
Please do.
Yeah.
My late friend, the great John, my dear friend, he died 15 years ago, sadly. Another cheesy story. That wasn't it. He wants him and another guy set up.
So hang on, this is two dead men, which brings us to VHS's. Is that what we're going for tonight?
No, he was.
So we need Chris to.
He was keen to do
there.
some recording of much loved films that we'd get out of the video shop. Uh-huh. So you're talking about VHS anyway, a pretty ropey format, much as we love it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to record it. Now, of course, if you remember that when you recorded from VHS to VHS, it just looked fucking
terrible.
Now,
what cable was he using?
I don't know, but the point being...
Is it from aerial to aerial port?
I don't know, but the point of the story is going to be this.
The story has no point unless we know these semi-facts.
That there was terrible... There was terrible... It's just a sort of frequency thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was dreadful flickering and whatnot. Yeah. And he recorded The Abyss. Right? And he'd recorded it, and he's played it on, and he said, look, it's not bad. And so we're watching it. And let's just say that certain scenes had the flicker on it in a really bad, terrible disruption. all the interiors were fine. And he said, it's actually all right for all the scenes that aren't underwater. Look on the bright side.
So back in the film, so this is the bit where... Oh, hang on, that's...
Oh, wait a minute. That's Gosling.
What's he doing?
Oh, my God, it's Ray Gosling. Yeah. I killed a man once.
So why is he in the newsroom then? That's a weird...
He's about to go and kill someone. He was quite famous back then. Get on with it, Gosling!
Mm.
Yes, was it Mr. McGregor?
That's Mr. McGregor, a bit emotional.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, he's away. Now, so at this point, this is where now the news is coming out that there's a hijack.
It's quite a short haircut, Fulton McKay's.
Yeah. Rocking. I don't ever remember his hair being as short as that.
Yeah. Surely there must be a telly debate or interview or something with...
There is a bit, yeah.
Like who's there?
They do a big sequence.
Someone like Robin Day or someone that turns up in it.
Yeah, they get other politicians in.
They don't get it anymore.
No.
Because they try to do that, they try to... They'll still have bits in films where they'll have interviews and things, but they tend not to use actual newsreaders.
No, the last time was, remember, the great Bob Friend of Sky TV. I think we talked about this before. Yeah, yeah. He turned up in, like, Mission Impossible and I think Independence Day.
Kenneth Kendall was in Doctor Who.
Yes.
Newsreader. Well, they used to call them newscasters, didn't they?
Doctor Who. Newscaster, yeah.
Yeah, newscaster.
And, oh, yeah, Andrew Marr was in Doctor Who.
Master Weapons of Destruction.
So now he's not... so there's a photograph of Simon Cadell, and he's not there. He's no longer in the newsroom.
Oh.
I wonder where he might be.
Matt Woods.
So he's gone missing.
When did Heidi Highstart? Was that about, what, 82?
Oh, no, it's earlier than that.
I think it's earlier
than that. Is it? Oh, this sort of time.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I wonder what did Sam Cadell done then prior to...
I don't know. He died very
young. Because... Yeah, he did die quite young. I mean, he was a total... When I saw Heidi High for the first time, I'd never seen him before.
No, he's good in it, though.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, the guy that took over, I never really cared for
him. He wasn't
much.
Very good.
Was
he Major or something like that?
No,
well, the other thing about him was...
Squadron leader.
Yeah, and that was all bullshit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all made up.
The trouble was, he didn't fear Gladys. It was Simon Cadell's fear of Gladys that made it funny.
Yes. And what did he... Why did he leave Heidi High? He just had enough of it. Because I see he went on and did another thing, didn't he? But I can't remember what it was.
He did that thing.
There was another
that
comedy,
he was in,
wasn't
that,
it?
That Caroline Langris, or her name was the very pretty, tall, blonde-haired actress.
Yeah, I know who you mean, but I don't think it's Caroline
something
Langris.
George or something like
was
that.
It
was Dear called
George, or no, that's Dear, I'm thinking Dear George.
Life After George.
Life After George.
Life After George.
Is that what it was called?
That's
yeah.
Right, yeah.
And he was sort of always.
Was that about a dead man?
No, her George had left her.
All right, okay.
And he was in love with her. He was the sort of chap that lived next door. It was a kind of sort of North London sort of media types and whatnot.
Oh, so stop behind your hand.
Aye. He was mostly a stage actor, though, I think, wasn't he?
He was one of those, you know, like, oh, he's massively well-respected on the stage. Like, you give a fuck.
Yeah. Who was some
he's good,
there,
though.
Was he?
What? Died of throat cancer, didn't he? Lung cancer. Very heavy smoker.
No, he was a great guy, Simon Cadell.
Now, this is the bit where basically Chrissy and the gang decide that they're going to take over the mine and basically run it until the miners find the gold. Because it's a nutty hijack.
As there going to be lots of mining hijinks?
Yeah. Hijinks in the hijack.
Is this a wee sort of joke on the working at the Upper Clyde shipyards then?
I've no idea.
All right.
They're going to stay and just, you know about that.
Elucidate
you
for
really
the,
are. You
for
really
the tape.
Are.
I know about you it, but elucidate for the tape.
Upper Clyde Shipyard, one of the most famous things in recent Scotland. You don't like anything Scottish, of course.
No. Jimmy I love lots of things.
Apart from leeching
a working
off of it.
They had a working. This was the genius of it. Instead of having a strike and withdrawing the labour, they barricaded the yard, stayed in it, and said, we're going to stay here and work.
For what purpose?
To keep the yard open so they could get paid when this was a proper country.
To prove that it was viable.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Hence the there will be nae bevying, there will be nae playing video games.
No PlayStation.
And when this is all up, I'll get up the road and go and work for Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Earn a nice living on the STV. Cheerio!
This bit's now like a sort of comedy montage of how much more fun it is to work in the mine when it's run by criminals.
Yeah. instead of when it's run by Bob Todd. Yeah. I find that very hard to believe.
Could be no more fun.
See, because if you have fun at work, yeah, guys, yeah, see, guys, we can have fun at work.
And great things happen.
We can, yeah, great things will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, great things will happen.
I'm not laughing a lot at this film, I must admit.
Some of Clement Frenet's stuff's kind of more wry.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like
the lads, this is quite knockabout.
They're not,
it's not peak Clement.
They're not often, yeah, laugh out loud funny. Lols.
Quite wry.
Well, they're laugh out loud bits in there.
Yeah, not a lot.
Oh, no, there were laughing loud stuff in the White Lilies. But, and like a Vida's in Pet?
Yeah.
Tended to be mostly, well, when you were a kid, it was usually Jimmy Neil.
The bit that made us laugh most, my mum loved that line. Remember at the end when the first series, the best series, when the shed goes up and you've just found out that Moxie's an arsonist. And he's drunk and he's on Bomber's shoulder. And he's going, "Takes me back, Bomber, it takes me back."
And what does Bomber say?
He says, "You're a good old panda."
Bomber's going to win that.
Bomber don't like the juice.
So now, key point here is that Simon Cadell.
All back.
Bomber feels very at home here in Germany.
Simon Cadell has somehow managed to smuggle himself in the funk to that.
Ah.
To the coal mine, you see, so he can get the exclusive take.
I think TV journalists would do.
Oh, surely not.
Who would they're know? Probably a fairly grim bunch of people, I would imagine.
Yeah. Who knows? Would the I missed it, but when he did he go in dressed as a miner?
I don't think they show.
Oh. Because there could have been all sorts of fun there with Buttercup.
Very nice rolling stock in the background. Yeah. Oh. I do like a good bit of rolling stock.
I mean, it would be better if I mistreated people now, even make a film set in a factory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody would fucking understand it.
That's true.
It's sort of one of the last films of that era, you know, where you could make films about industry.
Pretty much having the same thing that we have industrial correspondence and industrial policy as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But talking of which,
although there's clocking off.
Yeah, that was a good program. Yeah, that's true.
I really hate films and TV programs where they represent profession and do it so badly that even if you know nothing about that profession, you can tell it's shit.
What?
Case Study, The Replacement. Did you see that? The BBC drama?
No.
I saw the last episode.
Right. What was it?
Well, so The Replacement is meant to be about a group of architects.
Right. Is that one that was on last week? With,
yeah.
What's her name?
Oh, Vicky McClure. Okay. Yeah.
Just my Vicky McClure impression. God. This is how she acts.
You watch the
Line of Duty. She just does this all the time. When someone's talking, she'll just go...
She does do that, yeah.
Doesn't it? A lot. She sort of looks, across the hand, for those of you not in the room, she'll sort of cross her arms and then look off.
She does do that.
Camera what, is that it's like a bit like the Richard Gere look down inside.
Exactly, which he also does when he puts his fingers up to his face like that.
Yeah. Or the Anthony Hopkins, ruffle the forehead, smooth the hair.
Or the George Clooney blink a lot and kind of look to the side.
Yeah. Put them all together and you get a star!
So this is now the whole thing about, as is the case in some of these sorts of
things. You were going to say about that programme, The Replacement, what you didn't like about it.
Well, I didn't like anything about it.
No.
But the way that they dealt with the profession of architects.
Right.
And I will tell you now, gentlemen, I'm not an expert on that particular profession.
No.
Architecture.
You amaze me.
But it was just so obviously bullshit. And so there's a bit where...
Why?
Because they take... there's a sequence in the first episode where Vicky McClure's character is to give a presentation, right? Now, this presentation is about a library that the architects are designing.
Right.
And project managing. The build thereof, right? In the room for the presentation are her colleagues and the client, right? Now, and they already have the contract with the client.
Right.
So her presentation takes the form of saying, in a world with the internet, why do we need libraries? Libraries. Libraries are space. They're a physical space that you can walk in and dream. And you just, now, if you were doing a presentation to your colleagues, yeah, exactly, to your colleagues in any line of work.
To your colleagues?
Yes. And one person who's the customer who is already working with you. So you're not pitching to them. Like, what would you all do? You just sit there and go, What the fuck's this shit?
Actually,
Where's
outside
the time
anyway?
Purger effect on the PowerPoint
presentation? Do you not think?
Oh, how did that get there?
Yeah, way
the sort of conceit of doing a presentation to try and get the account for your company is like fucking 60 years old. We're doing that shit on Bewitched.
Yeah. Oh, I can't work under the soul. I got the wrong thing. He opens it up and he's got his kids drawing and
whatnot.
And then the head of the company goes, oh, actually, that's a great idea. Well, it's basically a Hudsucker proxy, isn't it? You know, for kids.
Yeah.
So back in the film, what's happening now is...
there's Robert Gillespie!
Yay!
Ah, no, he's playing... he's like the hostage negotiator policeman.
Now, he was also in Porridge, wasn't he?
Was he?
No, I don't think so.
He was in...
Starship the Motion Picture.
No. All in the Family.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Keep it in the Family.
Only Family was actually Monk. No, I don't think he was ever in Porridge, Robert Gillespie.
But Robert Gillespie was also in Star Watch. Do we know what Star Watch is?
Explain.
Yeah. Star Watch is a exciting sci-fi series from 1989, starring John Pertwee.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In a nice knitted.
You showed me a bit of it. Yeah,
that's right. Patrick Troughton.
But it wasn't a series, was it?
No, it never got made. No. There was a 15-minute pilot.
You showed me that, which is John Pertwee standing telling you what's going to be in it,
saying yes, this mitten had got to be made.
I'm with that in
there. Give it back, jumper. Which my cousin worked on.
Jack, sorry, let's just cut to the. Let's just stop this nonsense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If that wasn't John Pertwee, but was actually Cosmo and Gibbs doing that presentation, how would it sound?
What?
That's suspicious. Gibbs is a treat.
Maybe that's how that would sound, wouldn't it?
And. If it happened to be a septuagenarian London actor.
The trouble with this thing is, this mission's got success.
I like that. It was set in Penfell and Cove. And they'd actually had a series arc called
You Penfell. See that like it's supposed to matter.
So my cousin worked on it, right? And they sent us the 15-minute trailer and the brochure that they'd made.
It's a pity they never sent Roger along to work on it. They'd have fucking made it then.
Just paint him silver.
It's Lurko! While you're up there, let's get some of those special effects shots for tripods.
But anyway...
We'll get that third series made!
So we watched... Fort
Alan Clark. Time is a teenage girl coming.
So we watched the little trailer and read the brochure. And then we were asked to give our comments, right? Uh-huh. So we gave them full and frank comments. Because like a 13-year-old boy, and it's like one of the characters.
You are such a cock.
Yeah, exactly. One of the characters in it was a robot, which had,
was it our jive talking robot?
No, he'd accidentally ended up with the personality of a child, of a cheeky child. And so we said, "Well, that's a bit rubbish." Yeah. And so then my cousin phoned us up and berated us.
Oh, really? For telling the truth?
Yeah, and then revealed all the plot spoilers as to why it's going to be a really great series.
Was it the Dirty Pat Troughton?
Yeah, so he was going to be.
How did he die again?
He died. Life. I think he was on a job at the time.
I think he was on a job. I think he was certainly wearing his work outfit.
Anyway, so Robert Gillespie came in and played that role, Professor Caledon, who it would have transpired was immortal.
Yeah. Ah, well, that's been too.
Well, that's why Patrick Troughton did do the job.
Wasn't, yes.
What the crap is it transpired? Interestingly, for a film of this period, there's not much of a
doctor. What's happening?
There's not much of it. Not much, to be honest. There's not much of a doctor.
All the gaff about productivity being up and the media covering it.
There's not much about. There's not much Doctor Who presence in this.
No, I don't think there is actually. Although Tony Sober was in Dragonfire.
Yeah, laughter though.
From 1987. Craig, yeah.
Yeah, but this
Jimmy Ellis must have been in a Doctor Who at some point.
Jimmy Ellis was in
is he really playing Connell O'Blarney? Is that his character?
Yeah. Jimmy Ellis was in the most offensive Doctor Who story of all time.
Why is it offensive?
Boom!
What?
Boom!
Go on.
Because it's offensive.
Why are you shouting boom?
Because that's the most offensive sequence in the most offensive Doctor Who story.
Go ahead.
Because it's offensive because it tries to do this thing where it thinks it's clever and it's actually... It's not at all. It's really awful. So there's a sequence where Ace is talking to Shalom. And she's talking about, I think, how she was in the chemistry class. She made a homemade bomb.
Uh-huh.
And then when the teacher came, she threw it over her shoulder or something, and it went boom! But they intercut it with the baddies doing something. And so when she says boom, it intercuts to the explosion. And that's meant to be like cutting edge.
Well, that's not offensive, though, is it?
It's offensive.
I thought you were going to say, like, she went and shot and drew Deacon's face or something.
No, that would be offensive. Not in that story.
Yeah.
No. But it's offensive because it's...
But didn't it shit in all their faces, really?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Because as we know, I'd actually stop watching it at that stage because I'm not a true fan.
Yeah, so... we knew that. So Jimmy Ellis was in that story.
Right.
He was actually quite good in it, though.
What year was that?
Fucking rubbish. 1989.
What was I doing then?
Written by Ben Aronovich.
What month? Really? As in David's brother?
Yeah.
I say, like, I know David, I don't.
All right.
I've spoken to him before. Dave? He's a very nice man.
The D-Dog?
Yeah. The D-Dog. Because he was trying to get him to the hospital once. What month, 1989?
Come on.
It would have been the autumn, I think.
Oh, no, that's not what he asked you.
No.
Come on, fucking
was
proper
fan. Was it September, October, November?
It was October.
Do you know what I was doing? I was starting university.
I think you were enjoying your nutty slack.
I was in my first year at university.
Yeah, so you were definitely.
So when this happened,
you were definitely enjoying your nutty slack.
I wish. So when this came on, which you said was September 92, I was just about to go into my final year at university.
Wow.
Because being Scottish, we have proper universities with 4-year degrees.
So,
except for the one you went to.
Yeah, Cajun College.
Yeah.
Bridge of Allen College.
Yeah.
Now, this kind of brings us back to the context for this. So that we reckon this was on because the programming was all fucked up the night of...
They're
new chairs, by the way. Of Black Wednesday when Britain came out the ERM. Do you remember anything of that? I remember the news break. I was watching BBC One and it came up as a... strapline on screen, Britain leaves the
island. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the night it happened. I would have just been finishing. I think I was probably fucking working in a pub all the time because that was just before going into my final year.
Were you cleaning up your nutty
sack? I don't really remember anything of that night happening. I obviously remember it happening.
So what I wanted to introduce then is other news flash nights.
Oh.
And programming would be fucked up. And the two that I remember particularly, we may have covered this in previous podcasts, but nobody's listening anymore anyway. So,
David. Hi, David. Hiya. David's giving us lots of feedback all the time on Twitter. He's a good guy.
He's on by to correct any shop errors that Craig makes.
Oh,
and then
right.
We will.
He's the guy who just revealed himself today. He was the guy that pointed out that it was a Wimpy and not a McDonald's. So we like him. He's a good man.
And then Craig had to retract.
I think,
live on podcast.
I think you'll find what
my
I did
moment,
was...
My was moment 2016.
I do think I graciously said, he's right enough, actually.
That was a retraction.
Fair play to the guy.
That was your moment of 2016.
That was my
passing of...
Because David's not the sort of guy...
The best moment.
David's not the sort of guy that would push his glasses up.
Second best.
David's not the sort of guy that would push his glasses up and say, I think you'll find. He's not that kind of guy at all.
I think you're fine.
That's not
no idea.
That is not the kind of cat David is. He's a fucking relaxed cat.
Right, now, hang on. We need to watch this bit because this is the big TV.
By the way, can I just ask? Has anybody said cunt yet?
Well, give us a chance. We've still got another 20 minutes or so.
Not in the film. I mean, on the podcast.
You didn't say cunt in there.
We've not been doing quite a lot of swearing.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Sorry about that, folks.
Anyway,
right. So now there's a big TV debate between. So,
oh, Jesus, Clint Houston.
Yeah. Hey,
so he's like the Labour dude.
With Walesies.
With the booby doos.
No, he was in...
Robert Gillespie's pal in...
He was his agent.
Yeah.
Clint Houston was in the King's Demons. Doctor Strange.
There you go.
Happy about that.
Who's that actor that's playing that guy there? Down the,
so that is
the
Lionel Harper. He's the Cobble.
Oh, Reginald Marsh. Yeah. Sir.
What was he in again?
From The Good Life, Sir.
That's right,
and it was Terry's Medford's boss.
That's right, yeah.
So the important bit about this sequence is off the back of this. This is where it becomes apparent that actually Peter Bowles is deliberately keeping the hostage situation ongoing because of the increase in efficiency of production of coal.
So basically you have to create a hijack situation to get British miners to work productively
because it saved his bacon.
I always thought the Planet of the Finney was supposed to be quite left-wing. I think they were.
Well, but
yeah, but that's like maybe this is just. But then maybe this is like their carry on at your convenience.
Well, they're yeah,
just
true.
Going a wee bit in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Well, I think they're criticizing.
Maybe they're the ones that buried this.
Aye, yeah. Oh, this is before they became fucking tax exiles in Los Angeles, mind you.
But aye, so nights the things are covered. It's the two that I remember specifically. The night of the Gulf War One, as we're now required to call it, started.
So what do you remember then?
It was on ITV.
I don't remember that.
It started.
Yeah, I remember that kicking off.
It was the excellent Tough Guys was on the telly with Burt Lancaster and Kurt Douglas, and it was cut into in the middle with John Major.
I used to get confused between Burt Lancaster and George Lazenby. Continue. I don't know why.
I don't know.
So did Cubby Broccoli. Walked up on set and said, "Who's that cat? Get him off! That's the big fine guy." Fair enough.
Oh, well, hang on, look.
Cubby Broccoli's changed.
Look, that's Angela Rippon.
Oh, there's Ludo.
Hey!
Oh, and that fucking Muggeridge
character. Oh, Malcolm fucking Muggeridge.
Watch our dick.
Malcolm.
He is a cunt.
Muggeridge.
Ludovic Kennedy did a few cameos, didn't he?
Turns up in a... What do you call it?
He's in Party Game, which is the Christmas special where Jim Hacker becomes Prime Minister. And he's in Heavens Above, in Peter Sellers' film, where he's the minister, the vicar who's giving all the stuff away.
Yeah, right,
And there's a sort of news report, and he's very young Ludo standing there.
Is he?
I've just got Richard Ingham's biography of him.
Of Ludo?
Yeah. Great man.
Which came first, the game or the man?
His memoirs are called On My Way to the Club.
A few things about Ludovic Kennedy. One, he always used to whine about Michael Power being mean to Moira Shearer.
Yeah.
Which is really tiresome. Not as tiresome as Moira Shearer, right enough. Sorry, Rose. Two.
Why'd you say that?
Rose likes Moira Shearer.
Yeah, mad for this.
From Helensburgh, wasn't she, Moira Shearer?
Really?
Was she?
I think so. Or was that what's
her name? That's Deborah Carr.
Deborah Carr, yeah.
He wrote, one for books about the war, politics, I have a word about the war, but he wrote an amazing book called Pursuit, which is about the pursuit of the Bismarck.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason he wrote it is because...
He's there.
No, his father, he was there, but...
Kennedy, R.A.
One of the, there was a ship that got sunk...
Was it called Dignity?
There was a ship that got sunk in the River Plate by the Nisenau or the Scharnhorst or something. That his father was the captain of. They're all pindy.
Well, he should have been a bit more fucking gracious then, because Michael Powell made the Battle of the River Plate, which is a good picture.
It is a good picture.
Unlike the Red Shoes, which is a shite film.
Like
because by that time he was making shite films, which is why his career ended, apart from Peeping Tom. Not because his Peeping Tom was so shocking that it ended his career, it didn't at all. As the great Lindsay Anderson said, he was no longer a marketable talent.
Wow.
I like the Red Shoes though.
Aye, it's rotten.
So,
it's a funny joke.
Fucking Tales of Hoffman.
Oh no, Tales of Hoffman's gash.
Go on, say that for something.
Say it out loud.
What was it he said? What does what you call a Frenchman wearing sandals? Philippe Pilon. It's quite a funny joke.
It is good.
Aye, so Tough Guys was cut into by John Major. But the other one that I always remember, which I always thought was this, like.
So hang on, that was John Major cutting about Gulf War One. Is that what I said? Okay, alright, I'm just making sure I understand.
And
fucking hell, great. This is what we got a problem.
Shut up, you cunt. When remember the Hungerford massacre? Mm-hmm. Michael Ryan and all that? Mm-hmm. Which happened on a Saturday.
Mm. No, I don't think it did.
Yeah, it did.
I thought it happened during the week.
I thought it happened during the week.
Oh, well, it was a school holiday, so it might have been during the week. But the point is that the film that was meant to be on that night was called Nevada Smith. But it's like a sort of rootin' tootin' gunslinging western. So they took it off and put on instead Ooh You Are Awful. Which not only has a slightly inappropriate title, but it's also about a series of people being bumped off.
Yeah.
Now, on the Hungerford.
Doesn't involve someone showing their arse in a photo booth at the beginning, though.
Yeah, but then they get all murdered.
Now, related to Hungerford...
And in suburban streets as well. Mm.
Related to Hungerford massacre, right, there was a...
Michael Ryan.
Michael Ryan. So, there was a children's ITV series called Who's Next, okay? Which was... It was a bit like Right to Reply.
He wasn't on it.
No, he wasn't on it. That's not... Maybe he was. Maybe he was.
But... That was a slow burner. That was a slow burner. That was good.
I say, yeah, it was good. Now, but however, I distinctly remember an episode where they had, and I don't know how long afterwards it would have been, presumably a little bit of time, but they basically had a kid, like a 14-year-old kid, who was going on about how the UK gun laws were too stringent. And he said, right, uh-huh. And this is my recollection of what he says.
Your recollection.
But I think it's the descriptive word is definitely accurate, where he said, I don't understand why everyone's so worried about guns just because a man went a bit potty one day.
A bit potty?
Michael Bendis, potty time. And they let that on television.
Wow.
On kids' television.
Yeah.
Who's next?
And that little boy... grew up to be
me. Yeah, that's why.
Home secretary.
Yeah. Theresa.
No one else said.
Grew up to be Theresa Villiers.
But actually, who's next is another one of those things, a bit like this. Mm-hmm. Which no one else seems to remember. There is a little clip of the title sequence, and that's about it on YouTube. I've never seen.
I don't remember who's next.
Was get it like on the open box. To question? Get in the box.
Who's next?
That's how. That's
was it like open to question?
No, it was like the right.
The lovely Joel Nicholson.
Leave that one hanging there. Can we squeeze another cunt in here?
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Clans.
Some canoodling going on here.
Yes. So this is Jacko.
See,
I definitely think he is. Because he's exactly like the character in Bush Rocks.
Does he ever say, because of you, these
things. Well, Dexies look like they're watching a mine, let's face it, don't they?
Because of you.
So at this point, this is where they uncover Simon Cadell.
Oh, and
who reveals to them that there isn't actually any gold at all. And it's been...
How does he know that?
Because he overheard. He was connected to a TV station when they were doing the debate. So he overheard it.
So actually, there's no gold there and all they've been doing is didn't coal.
Yeah.
Push the British product.
Have you missed any jokes yet about a black man working in a coal mine?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm sure there must have been.
Yeah.
Really? You think Clement Lafreniere?
Well, but if they don't, well, there's. But it depends on who the character is, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Who's delivering said joke, and where we are meant to sit vis-a-vis our empathy towards
Barry Evans isn't hung around.
No. Not that his career much after that. He was too busy driving
his V-mini car.
So he was in Mind Your Language, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about that the other day, weren't we? Because it ran on LWT.
Yep.
And the Michael Grade accident.
Michael Grade crashed about
80.
No, it was earlier than that.
Was it?
Oh, I thought we found out it was actually later than that.
I think it was about 1980,
81.
But then there was an independent production company who brought it back for a series, like six parts in like 85.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Did we not look it up and find out that it was earlier than we thought?
Yeah, that's right. It was 78.
Because
I liked it too.
It's got animated title sequence.
Yeah.
And it had Francois Pascal.
It was just one of those, but it was so ridiculous. But of course, it was great.
And that bloke turned up in Indiana Jones and his dad.
But it has that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's a demonstration of that sort of racist line, which is, oh, I'm just offensive to everyone, because it was offensive, wasn't it?
It was so silly. Wow.
It didn't do anything horrible. It's like, you know...
Nobody was horrible.
The argument about Mind Your Language, not Mind Your Language, and Love Thy Neighbour. What's his name? Rupert.
Dark Smith.
And what's his name?
Rudolph Walker.
Rudolph Walker always came off. But he was clearly the smartest, the smarter, the most relaxed. Him and his wife, and what's her name that was Jack Smith, just thought Jack Smith was a fucking idiot. And he was shown to be time and time and time again.
And the Mind Your Language was all about how stupid the teacher was.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's an easy thing.
They were always playing him.
People say, it was lazy stereotypes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't offensive. No. It was just stupid.
Yeah. Making jokes out of people's.
So the Spanish guy had a big fucking handlebar mustache, a leather jacket, and was oily and a bit sexy. Yeah.
At least they were in the common market. now we're really sort of sensitive, but we're being floating off into the Atlantic somewhere.
So now we're getting actually quite close to the end of the film, which is they now want to get out. They realise that the government and the police aren't going to let them break out because they want them to carry on running the mine.
Keep mining!
So then, there's
how ironic!
So then there's this dude, this lorry driver, offers to let them out.
Mm-hmm. If they hijack the lorry.
Uh-huh. And then there's a little bit of Clannad coming up when Jacko says goodbye to Thelma. Little reprise.
Again, look at that shot and that sort of wintry sunshine there.
It's nice, isn't it?
It looks absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
Well, it's like the title sequence is... It's kind of a cut above.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you see even some of the sort of rather subpar sort of Amicus ones or whatever, the ones that I did to like Freddie Francis. They look absolutely fucking fantastic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know?
Can I also apologise for the fact that when I transferred this, because I read this.
Ah, that would have been nice.
Oh, right, so you didn't do the stop and start, you just let it run. Of course, you said you let it run. Because at the time, because like I said, I've got a lot of tapes in there, and some of them have adverts and some of them don't, because at the time, we all thought we'd be fucking clever pausing it.
So we used
and
to
turn it back on so that you missed the adverts, so try and have the whole film. Oh, how we rue the day.
Yeah.
So the adverts were
lost all those Menu Masters adverts. Yeah.
So what ones are there in the original
one? I'm trying to remember. I think there is...
Oh, you must remember.
I'm trying to remember. There is Cadbury's Flake advert.
Which one?
The one
in the field.
Right.
Or the bath.
With the overrunning bath. Wouldn't want to live downstairs from her, would you?
Yeah.
Fucking chocolatey water seeping through. You don't want that,
do you? We've all had that.
And there was
one of the crumbliest, flakiest soil pipe.
There's a Rumbelows.
Right for the plumbers there.
One of the crumbliest, flakiest bumbles.
Rumbelows? Yeah. Was this in England?
Yeah.
Well, did they ever.
It would have been up here in Rumbelows.
Ah, but did they edition adverts for Channel 4?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, totally. Because they used to get. Yeah. Yeah, because the...
Now we are Findle Fitters, we only fit the best.
Oh, well, actually, would they have done by 92? I'm not sure, actually. I remember earlier on in the...
Well, the third boy here had left the mom with a known, Chris.
Sorry. Yeah, quite.
Well, but it would break up the furthest, wouldn't it?
Because early...
Right, they're escaping.
Early... Yeah. Now, look, sorry, the driver is actually his mother-in-law.
Scott is Cheddar! It's my kind of
who's come and realised that her son-in-law isn't as fit as...
Comments about it, to be fair, she does kind of make quite a convincing fellow there.
She does. And actually, it's not that it doesn't seem to be that difficult for them to smuggle their way out.
No, that's quite heartwarming, though, isn't it? You're going to want them to get away now.
Nice shot there. Buttercup waving goodbye.
I just think
the craft is good, actually. I'd be interested to see who's done the editing on this, because it's nicely cut as well. It's got good sort of sense of rhythm. Mm-hmm. All the action's moving quite nicely.
You get a lot of films of that type, of that period, where they're either ridiculously frenetic, or scenes just go on
sluggishly paced. This one's got quite a nice... You know how many minutes? About 80 minutes into it now?
Yes, because it's not that long a film.
All right, we're coming to
it's
the
only
end.
About like 83 to 4 minutes, I reckon.
Really?
Yeah, that's how...
It must have a fucking gallop to the last minute.
Yeah.
Like north by northwest. I shot in the bed, hey, that's us away, that's us up the road.
Boom.
Film done. No, I was going to say that Channel 4 and when it started, remember there used to be massive.
So my tummy is making very strange noises.
Used to be massive.
Oh, hello, we're abroad.
Well, have they made it away?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, hang on a minute, where's the camera going?
Ah.
Oh, that's quite arty.
Oh, that's nice. Like, is that meant to be like a sort of reversal of the Lavender Hill mob where they've actually got away with the money?
Ah, well, this one...
On this one, they've taken their newly acquired skills and actually opened up.
All right.
But again, that's quite nice, the way the camera tilted down. Oh. Not pans, tilted down.
Oh.
And went under the ground, you see.
Nice. Do you not think Neil McCarthy as an actor always looked like somebody who was just ready to murder everybody?
Well, he actually had...
A Cromagally or something?
Something like that, yeah, absolutely extraordinary.
No, but I mean, he was just really intense.
Aye. We saw him in Steptoe and Sunride again.
Steptoe and Sunride again, he plays Lenny, yeah. He was in the original...
I think he's wearing the same suit in this one, actually.
He was in the original production of Luke as well. Kind of
right, yeah.
When Sam Cadell wins this TV Journal Award thing, what actually award might that have been?
Or what, the, like the fucking Daily Mirror Scoop of the Year Award or something? Yeah.
Have I told you my...
Well, clearly the only award to get at the time that was worth anything was the TV Times Award.
Yes,
so you mentioned Luke there. I saw What the Butler Saw on stage once.
Oh, yeah.
At the National
Theatre
in London.
What did the Butler...
Well, I'm going to tell you, unfortunately...
Were you looking to the King, or
was the Butler watching Cinderella?
No, well, you ask a very good question, gentlemen. Because...
Thank you.
I went to see it because it was Richard Wilson. I don't believe it. And John Alderton in it. And what's her name?
I wouldn't have been surprised.
Very attractive actress that's married to Julian... What's his name? Julian...
That's
Glover. Selma... She was in The History Man, and she was in the sequel to... She's an attractive Scottish actress. Anyway, she was in it and whatnot. They were
Alison
all in
Clare.
It. But the point is, she's a bit like her. The point was, the young actor in it who does a streak... Okay.
It's a lovely shot.
Oh, hello.
Camera pulling back down.
Hey! The Daily Stunner.
The Daily Stunner.
And it says...
The End.
That's quite sweet, yeah. Nicely done. I'll tell you the rest of my anecdote after we've seen the credits. Right. We need to catch up.
Well, that was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was quite good.
I've
never seen it, definitely.
No, I was going to say... as a curio.
I kind of understand why it's never re-emerged. Because it's a bit of a...
It's a good cast, though.
I can't imagine it would mean very much to people now.
What, all the coal mining references and...
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. Look, he's called Jacko.
Yeah.
Sam Kelly. Is Sam Kelly a dead man now?
Yeah, he died. Yeah. He died not that long ago.
So let's go through these. Is Derek Deadman a dead man? Is Derek Deadman a dead man? Is he?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Derek is a dead man.
Neil McCarthy, he must be dead.
He died quite young.
Jimmy Ellis. I think he died a
few years ago.
Yeah, not that long ago.
Madeline Smith.
Me just have been last year.
She's still alive and she's
Madeline Smith's still with us.
Carmen Silvera. She must be a dead man.
Carmen Silvera, I don't think so. I think she's passed on.
Henry McGee's dead.
Henry McGee died. He was living in Brinsworth House.
Was he?
Hmm? Trisha Hayes is
that where Richard O'Sullivan is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him. Is he still alive?
He is.
Peter Bowles is alive.
Actually, we need to stop this, don't we? Because
we did that before. Yeah.
That's Mark Miller.
Fucking dropping like flies.
Peter Bowles is alive. Yeah. Ian Cuthbertson is dead. Richard Widmark is dead. Janet Brown is...
This is like her Sharon.
Is she alive?
Dead.
Peter Butterworth's widow, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, yeah.
Glenn Houston's dead.
Roy Kinnear fell off horse, didn't he? That's how he died.
He fell off and broke his pelvis.
Making the Return of the Musketeers.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, look, it was Ray Gosling. Look,
he's dead. That's a weird thing.
Weird.
Killed a man once.
Ray Gosling's a weird person that he turned up in it.
Yeah. Written by, there you go, directed by Gilbert Taylor. Uh-huh. Produced by Dodi Alfayed. This was just before he made Chariots of Fire. Who's Wadi Xayed again?
Oh, Wafik Xayed.
Wafik Xayed.
He was the...
Wexendua, right?
He was the slightly... Ah. Oh, he might still be alive, so I'll be careful. He was a financier.
Ah, right, okay.
Who dealt in...
Of the old school.
He was a financier, or a financier, who dealt in films and things that explode. What was the name of that film with Michael Caine that his missus in it? And Peter Ustinov,
Ashanti.
Yeah. How would
Michael Caine have answered that question?
I'm looking forward to making this film, but I would really like it if this dark-looking gag girl could come along for it. She's a beautiful girl. She used to be Miss World, and I bet her in Annabelle's, and she's lovely.
Ashanti.
Can I point
out... Certainly!
Can I point out... I was right about the editor there, because I just saw the name Terry Rawlings.
Oh!
Who had just made, I would have thought, Alien just before that. And he went on to cut lots of big Hollywood movies in the 80s, 90s and whatnot.
There's a very alluring idea that there's like somewhere in Hollywood, like maybe Dick Clement and Vifrini were doing that thing where they were starting out over there. And they went over and stuck this on and in the room with like George Lucas, Dan O'Bannon. And all these people, and they all sat and watched, and everybody walked away.
I wonder what they were drinking.
I've got to get Patricia Hayes, I've got to use
that. Absolutely.
So if Dan O'Bannon was in the room, I wonder what they were drinking.
I can't come in the candle.
With Camilla
Mammoth. Might they have any food?
Well, we're back.
We've covered all the bases. We're back!
So there we go. So that was Nutty Hijack.
That was Nutty Hijack.
What's coming up? People gave us lots of ideas.
So we've got...
The only one that sticks in my head is a Lightly Lads movie.
Oh, there's a few. Yeah, so we've got...
I'd offer you a beer, but I've only got the six.
We're going to try and rattle through some of listener requests.
Yeah.
Did you see the ones somewhere?
That, yeah, I've got a note of them.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll
see all the ones that coincide with the stuff that we want to do anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, well, the stuff yeah. we've got.
I recently had a clear out of DVDs in which I mostly just cleared out ones that I bought for a fiver for these fucking commentaries. Looking at my son saying, do you want me to keep Deep Impact? No, Dad. No,
there was
no. Only please, Chris, Dad.
It's only Chris that's obsessed with
it. Please throw out 2012, Dad. I don't want to watch it again.
Flash Gordon, I think, was on the list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now we're having an administrative meeting, aren't we, on air, about stuff that we might do in future.
I had my theatrical anecdotes.
What?
So, in What the Butler Saw,
a young man
dressed as a policeman takes his clothes off and streaks across the stage. It's such an old play, it was actually Kevin Lloyd back in the day. Right. However, when I saw it, there was a young, very tall, thin actor who did it, so he sees Bobby. Bobby, wobbly, wobbly, bob as he runs across the stage.
Do you see his nutty slap?
A couple of years ago, I got out, I found the, because this is like the mid-90s. I was in a different marriage. And I got out, I found the program for it. Guess who played the young actor?
I know who it was. I know who it was, actually, because I remember this.
Hello, it's Father Lionel. Let's just see.
14 TV!
If he was watching his own body
Was it Derek Gilar?
It wasn't James O'Brien. Well done. Doing this one, mate.
Was it Sean Connery in The Untouchables?
Is that?
Right, no. Who was it, for fuck's sake?
If he were watching himself in the subjunctive, he might say, oh, you are beautiful. I've seen David Tennant's knob. I've also seen Russell Brand's, but that's a different story. And the other thing that happened, theatrical anecdote type, was about 10, 11 years ago. I've probably told this before. I went to see the stage play that Mel Smith was in.
Oh, yeah, that was Michael Fassbender.
It was Michael Fassbender, Fassbender.
Is he a Fassbender?
I don't know.
Just asking the
question. Don't ask him.
Just a question.
Well, he is on the stage, darling. He is on the stage.
There you go, that was that.
So Nutty Hijack?
Yeah, it was good.
Heard of it? It was alright.
I knew the name. I honestly, when you brought it up, I was thinking, I must have seen that. I don't think I have.
I'm not sure I have. We'll get it back. It's one of those films.
I reckon there's probably bits on screen.
Probably. And there's so many people in it that you think, you just memory mash it up. Our coming commentaries will be sporadic. So don't wait your knickers for another week.
Oh, come on. We'll knock off a few in the next couple of weeks.
We'll knock some out.
I will. I'll knock a couple off over your face in the next couple of weeks.
That's fine. No problem. Well then.
And then we'll do Flashcon.
Yes. Bye, everybody.
Bye.